and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. There's a growing consensus that a deal is necessary to end the conflict in Ukraine. This is progress. The problem is there is no consensus on what kind of deal that might be. Trump demands Ukraine negotiate with Russia. The Europeans and Zelensky talk the language of peace while supporting more war. Crosstalking War and Peace, I'm joined by my guest, Dr. Mirza in London. He's a senior journalist at Radio Himalaya News. In Germany, we have Tobias Karin. He is an entrepreneur and political analyst. And in Los Angeles, we have Pai Ian. He is an independent geopolitical and macroeconomic analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Pai, you got up so early in the morning for us. We all appreciate it very, very much. Welcome to the program. I hope you've had at least one cup of coffee. All right, let's start out what the deal is. The title of this program is Deal, What Deal? A lot of progress has been made since that meltdown in the Oval Office. Trump is demanding a deal. He has almost, I was going to say almost all the high cards. He has all of the cards, and he has the table as well. So a deal is in train here. What deal could that be? Because we have Zelensky on X saying, Ukraine is ready to come to the negotiating table as soon as possible to bring lasting peace closer. What does that mean to you 1 week after this disastrous Oval Office meeting? Go ahead, Pai.
Yeah, I think the deal is ultimately, if you read between the lines, it's an optical deal for the Western world to save face after 3 years of a brutal war that doesn't seem to be leaning in the West's favor, regardless of how many armaments, resources, or whatnot are being sent over. So it is a deal essentially to save face. It's really why anybody in the public space is there. Let's figure out, first of all, who's in charge. This is my broken record mantra every time I'm either on this show or anywhere else. I mean, who's truly in charge? Because Zelensky, Trump, Vance, Rubio, Starmer, Macron, all of these banking establishment assigned public figures are tactical distractions away from the actual Atlanticist power structure, which involves very private trillionaire oligarchs literally hellbent on seizing Ukrainian and ideally, ultimately, Russian natural resources and state assets. Ukraine's rare earth metals, you'll notice it's a deal, but it's a deal for peace, and the price are the minerals, the rare minerals out of Ukraine. Why? Ukraine's rare earth metals are valued at 11.7 trillion, with a T as in Thomas, trillion US dollars, and Trump reportedly wants half of Ukraine's metals. For whom, though? For whom, ultimately? Who is Trump's theatrical agent? Who reassigned him to the White House for a redux of Kissinger's neo, quote-unquote, madman theory of geopolitical influence? Who is constantly reorganizing bondholders for Ukraine's debt right after the 2014 coup? Because the answers are pretty warm. We're getting closer there. Consider also that Ukraine's mineral deposits are globally significant because they offer diversification from, surprise, telling dominant producers of rare minerals like China. Consider also that Trump's core mandate in being in power again involves separating Russia from China as much as possible, and then you will get away from the distractions that, again, are tactical and are transatlantic in nature.
You know, so much of what you say I agree with. I mean, certainly this is all a distraction. If I can go to the doctor, Dr. Mirza in London, we've all been following the pronouncements coming out of European capitals, NATO land, about, the Ukraine, as long as it takes. We've heard this mantra from Biden, and now the Europeans are saying it. I agree with what Pai had to say. This is all a deflection. It is lost. They're going to make a lot of noise. They're going to say, we're going to do everything for Ukraine. We're going to use the profits from stolen Russian assets to fund it, which is dubious in itself, because they know they have lost, and they want to turn around and say, we did everything we could, but Trump decided. I think that's a diversion right now. What do you think, Dr. Mirza?
I totally agree with you, Peter. This is a diversion, and the question is, why they need a diversion? What is causing them to talk about deals and diversion when on Thursday, the European summit, emergency summit is being held. And in that summit, everyone is trying to force each other to pledge billions of dollars in a kitty to fund further fund this conflict in Ukraine. I think that since the American support has waned away, this new Trump administration has totally changed the paradigm of international relations in that regard. The European defense budget is not enough to finance such a big project. I call this Ukraine war a project. It's a project, basically, yep, that was planned for years and years. So they are now squabbling with each other for money and talking about bonds and rising taxes and all that. This kind of adventurism is going to hit them back in their own countries because there is unemployment, there is poverty. Child poverty in the UK is on the rise like never before, and they are trying to fund a losing war. This is going to be a big question mark when it comes to British public opinion. Next is the Ukraine's military leadership is now disillusioned. It's totally disillusioned. They have no direction. They know they are fighting a losing war. And internal discontent among the Ukrainians is increasing. So I think this deal is just an excuse to buy time in the wake of the new American stance about this war, where this administration is trying to distance itself from Ukrainian war because they have to address to their own deficits and economic crisis. So they have decided to pull out. And now Europe is in panic mode. And on Thursday, Francis Macron has made a very dangerous statement. He has said that we will also consider the possibility of using the nuclear deterrent. And the Russian foreign minister has countered that with saying that this is a serious threat to Russia. So I think Europe is crazy. They are going mental. Yeah. Britain says they are going to be boots on ground. Yeah, and we are going to have our planes in the sky. One NATO plane shot down by Russia is the trigger for Third World War.
That's if and only if all members of the alliance agree to Article 5. Donald Trump is not going to do that. It will backfire on them. Tobias, you know, one of the things that we keep hearing from Western leaders, not on the American side of the Atlantic, but they keep talking about a ceasefire or a truce. And what's really strange about using those two words is that a ceasefire, a truce, involves at least two parties. The party that is not being consulted is Russia, and Russia has said repeatedly it is not interested in a truce or a ceasefire. Go ahead, in Germany.
Yeah, thank you very much. From my kind of perspective, I went to Russia in 2018. I think I'm kind of well-educated person, also from my grandfather, and I'm every time he was saying, if you don't know where you're coming from, you don't know where to go. So I was visiting Russia, and I also have joined in 2019 the Yalta Economic Forum in Crimea, and I also have visited an election party back in the days in for Trump in Washington D.C. And for sure, it's everything has an economical reason. But from my kind of perspective, these are all finally results which were caused from the Second World War. And after the Iron Curtain fall in 1990, our Minister of Foreign Affairs, Genscher, together with Gorbachev, which I personally see one of the most major good politicians after the Second World War who make this Cold War ending, they signed a decree that there is no movement to the East. And this normally, from my kind of perspective, after I have seen, and I also have good relationships to the GCC states, and also see, I was in Jordan, Amman, when it happened in Gaza, the war. I'm seeing the problem that we totally lost the transparency why there was a NATO, which Germany joined, and also other European members in 1955. And to be honest, after the Iron Curtain fall in 1991, we should have left NATO and we should have established a different kind of organization to protect war in Europe. when I'm looking at it from the German perspective at this moment, you know, we have the Article 24 in our basic law where we are allowed to join an organization to protect global peace in Europe. But when you're seeing what was happening on the timeline in the years until now, Germany was, you know, I felt sometimes if we are colonized by the Americans. And
Tobias, the fact of the matter is Germany is not a sovereign state. It does not control its sovereignty. It does not control its foreign policy. It does not control its security. And on top of it, most likely, 99% sure, the Americans blew up your pipeline. And what did Germany say about it? What did Germany do?
This is exactly what is stupid, because America is the biggest member in the NATO, Germany is the second biggest, and they bombed Nord Stream 1 and 2, and this caused this economical crisis. The problem is that I was already telling this in 2019, we need something in Europe like a new Vienna Congress, because after 1812, when Napoleon tried to conquer Russia and lost the fight of Waterloo, then when Adolf Hitler entered in 1941, then from 1990 until right now, we had the same, because the NATO was only done for one purpose. The Americans are leading this, and they are offering an open door policy. But what was the target? To go until Vladivostok? And you know,
the open door policy was open to everyone except for Russia, and that is the problem here. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on war and peace. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing war and peace. You know, Pai, I've been covering the issue of Ukraine ever since the illegal overthrow of the elected government in February of 2014. So this is my 11th year in covering this crisis. And what I find really interesting, and I've gone through it over and over again, I think I already mentioned to you, I've done over 100 programs on this topic alone, and how the narratives are always changing, okay? Russia's lost, Russia's, Ukraine is winning, Russia's going to collapse in the matter of weeks, you know, all, you know, the ruble to rubble, all of this nonsense here. But what's really interesting is what's coming out of European capitals. The panic is that it's not all, it has nothing to do with Ukraine. It has never had anything to do with Ukraine as a political entity. I'm keeping in mind what you said at the beginning of the program. But what Western politicians, the Europeans, they're desperate to keep the political West relevant because it is rapidly becoming irrelevant. Go ahead, Pai.
A part of that relevancy involves theatrics. We just got Trump back in for a second term. And immediately it's this sense of, I'm very pro, or his administration is seemingly optically very pro-Russian. That is tactical good cop, bad cop being deployed once again. So in this past couple of weeks, deploy collectively Europe as bad cop. Look, we're going to rearm. Look, we're going to find $800 to $900 billion U.S. from somewhere in order to rearm. But Trump and his administration are ridiculing Zelensky on the floor of the White House and demanding apologies out of him. This is all, like, I don't know if anybody who's sober and in a position of influence across the entire Eurasian landmass is genuinely fooled by this pantomime, this kabuki theater. In order to confuse. Your German guest referenced, and you did as well, Peter, the sabotaging of the Nord Stream 1 and 2. I would argue the prior sabotage was the removal of Gerhard Schroeder and escorting him unceremoniously out of power for a much more compliant Merkel. Why? Because Schroeder had the ear to the ground for German industry.
Yep.
And leaning closer to naturally, logically, rationally towards Eurasian assets and forming alliances. Well, we had two prior world wars to prevent a German, Russo-German alliance. That's worked. That's fairly obvious. Merz coming in, it's business. The new mandate, just to reiterate what I said earlier, is how best to separate Russia and China sustainably and how to do so as soon as possible. And Ukraine, to address your earlier question or point, has supposedly been this neo-Afghanistan opportunity to try and pierce Russian resolve, let alone its economy, let alone its military capacity, to try and bleed Russia dry as much as possible. That obviously is not working. And hence the need to shuffle the deck here to have a newer approach that involves some of this theatrics.
You know, Dr. Mirza, in London, this phase of the conflict, 3 years, it started in 2014, but when let's use the starting point for our purposes, the special military operation. So you really had the collective West using Ukraine as a proxy to weaken Russia. As Pai has already pointed out, that hasn't worked. As a matter of fact, I live here. It strengthened Russia immensely and made it actually richer. But now you have these European leaders, again, after the meltdown in the Oval Office. So explain to me, sir, how Europe thinks it can take on Russia, the United States, and China all at the same time. I mean, what Kool-Aid are these people drinking? Go ahead.
Well, I think that they are desperate. They have their own economic. There are two aspects to this that I can see. Number one is their domestic failure to increase their GDP over the years and surviving on the brink of recession, the brink of slumps, economic slumps. In Britain, people are queuing outside food banks. Every Saturday, every Sunday, people are going to the churches to get food from the food banks. And they are talking about, the government is talking about, you know, funding a war that everybody knows is a proxy war. You talk to someone on the street in London and they discuss with them, they all laugh. They say they know it's a proxy war. And the reason that Europe now is panicking, they want to take on China and Russia, and maybe in the near future they are going to take on America as well, because they have lost the plot. They have totally lost the plot. This is not the time for war. This is the time to sit and talk. This is the time to negotiate. What have we learned from the Second World War? Whole of Europe was totally destroyed. Now they want to do that again. They want to repeat the catastrophic disaster of World War II. So these European leaders are selfish, they are egocentric, and they have no room in their heart for the people who they represent or
Obviously, in over the last 3 years, let's go to Tobias in Germany. Nobody, as far as I'm aware, in Europe voted for this proxy war. No one has ever asked the people. And we have political parties, election after election across the continent, populist parties on the left and right running against it. And then you have the radical center that will not deal with sometimes up to 30-40% of the electorate that is against the consensus of the elites. I mean, it is becoming less and less democratic. Ukraine certainly is not a democracy. Go ahead, Tobias.
Yeah, I'm seeing it in general not so urgent. I think there is the biggest transformation of economy and business also abroad, and it's a huge opportunity. The thing was only to weaken in general Germany and in Europe, because we had these ties with Russia. The problem is that all the information which are presented in the media are not based on real facts. So the whole thing is we are like brainwashed. You know, when you are looking also the movies back in the days. You have Hollywood, there's every time the Russians are the bad and the Americans and the Western alliance are the good. And also regarding right now that we as Europeans are not really sitting at the negotiating table, for me the most important thing is right now to stop war immediately. And if Trump is fine to do so together with Putin, then it's nice, because if America says, okay, Ukraine will not come into NATO, you can keep the areas which you already have took over, which Russia will never give back, because I have visited Donetsk and the Donbas. They already have invested huge amounts of billions in infrastructure, and the people are fine with this. Then we stop the war. And then later on, we have to review what really happened on the timeline, and we have to negotiate by effects. Because for me, my perspective, I'm in the last 10, 15 years more abroad. I was proud to be a German, I'm proud to be a European, but I feel myself more as a global citizen. And what is here going on, you know, we had the Second World War, mostly 50 million people from German and Russian side are died, but via Seoul, we like and we love each other. So also the administration from the Russian side is less aggressive, and I don't right now see their reason why Russia would go further to invade further into Europe. So the first step is to making peace and stop this killing of the young people.
Tobias, hopefully one of the outcomes of all this will be the end of NATO, or at least a much more weakened one. Pai, I've asked my guests over the last few weeks, ever since the famous Trump-Putin phone call, are we witnessing a Yalta 2.0? And when I say Yalta, I think of it in a positive way. I know there are historians that say it was a betrayal. I think it was the three victors sitting down. That's what happens when you win. Go ahead, Pai.
I don't think so, because the core mandates still involve isolating Russia and weakening its influence as possible. To just go back to the first term that you used at the outset of the show, and what's at core here is the term deal. Whose deal? Why? How are the Russians supposedly involved? Like, where are the Russians with regard to this minerals deal that I was referencing earlier? Like, okay, so Zelensky... he apologizes to Trump. They kiss and make up. Okay, let's have that minerals deal go through. Let's finalize on that. And that, but where are you involving the Russians? Where are you involving any of the East? It's like this is just like literally someone screenwriting and scratching the draft and throwing it away on an hour by hour basis. I reiterate, we need to figure out who's genuinely in charge. We need to figure out who specifically, what their roles are, what their influences are with regard to industry, their commuting schedules, whatever we need to do. That's core mandate ahead of everything else. That's for me.
Well, I mean, Pai, if I can stay with you here, given what Russia has demanded, and it's all publicly known, people say, what do the Russians want? What does Putin want? It's go to the Kremlin website. You can find it out. It's really easy here. I would tend to say that I would submit to you, my guests and my audience here, is that Russia is going to get as pretty much exactly what it's demanded from the very, very beginning. Why? Because Trump has it doesn't have high cards when it comes to Russia, but when it comes to everyone else, no one else has cards except for the Russians and the Americans. 30 seconds before we finish off.
Yeah, just the optics will continue to reemphasize that Vladimir Putin is the new Adolf Hitler. Yeah. Russia is the new Nazi Germany. They're hell-bent on taking over Europe and then the rest of the world. And that is classic psychological projection from those who are actually genuinely running things from behind the curtains transatlantically.
Yeah, and very effectively. I tend to agree. I mean, they've had a number of narratives that have fallen flat on their face, and that there's nothing that's going to stop them because they are the ones that started this, and they will never take responsibility for it. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in London, Germany, and in Los Angeles. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.